Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Classes of Mail. My name is Alan Gygax, and today we're going to get back to reading from the ELM. Hopefully, my sound quality is a little bit better. It turns out that I had gotten complacent, and oh, this new microphone's so great. It picks up all this sound, but it turns out that I still have to be pretty close to it for the sound to be at its best. So this one should sound a little bit better, a little less echoey. All right, so the good news is I have completely finished reading and synopsizing the ELM. So it's all ready to go. It's just a question of how much I can get through reading. And I'm pretty motivated because after that, we go on to season four, where we're going to talk about holding ourselves accountable. I know that I'd previously referred to it as holding the union accountable, but the union is all of us. And so really, we're talking about things that apply to each other and apply to ourselves. So that's what season four is going to be about. And I want to get to that as quickly as I can, because the first thing I want to cover is Robert's Rules of Order, which is how all of our union meetings run, including the National Convention. And people need to understand what Robert's Rules of Order are. But we'll never get to it if I don't start reading from the ELM. So we move on to Section 8 of the ELM, Safety, Health, and Environment. 810, Occupational Safety and Health Program. 811, General. 811.1, Authority. The Postal Service is subject to Public Law Number 91-596, the Occupational Safety and Health OSH Act of 1970, pursuant to the Postal Employees Safety Enhancement Act, PESEA, of 1998. The OSH Act provides for citations, penalties, and criminal referrals for those employees who fail to comply, or those employers, rather, who fail to comply. The Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA, is responsible for promulgating and enforcing standards and regulations under the OSH Act. 811.2, Principles. 811.21, Management, Commitment, Involvement, and Accountability. Managers must, notice the word must, A, demonstrate a commitment to providing safe and healthful working conditions in all Postal Service-owned and leased installations. B, become involved in day-to-day safety performance. And C, be held accountable for safety performance and compliance with OSHA standards and regulations. 811.22, Vision Statement. The Postal Service will become a leader in occupational safety and health for the federal government and private sector by demonstrating a commitment to integrating safe work practices into all of our services. The Postal Service is committed to participation in the OSHA voluntary protection programs. The Postal Service also engages in 811.23 guiding principles. Now, I must have cut off some of what I copied there, but it's all this 811.22, this corporate speak vision statement. Like, dude, the Postal Service will become a leader in occupational safety and health for the federal government. Not even close, not by a mile. Do we've got to be maybe, are we dead last in terms of occupational injuries? Like, you'd like to think, like, surely people in the Marine Corps get injured more often than us, but I don't know, maybe they don't. I remember seeing, you know, how awful our stats are on that. So it's lip service on this guiding print or this vision statement. All right, so here's 811.23, the guiding principles. The guiding principles of the Postal Service are the following. A, people. Employees are our most valued resource. Our employees must be provided a safe and healthful workplace. So once again, there's that word must be provided a safe and healthful workplace. Are they doing that? I mean, maybe for the most part, but this is, we can certainly take issue with the way management runs things in terms of it being safe and healthful. B, customers. When our employees work more safely, our performance improves. C, excellence. We can demonstrate that management and employee attention to working safely is good business. D, integrity. As a leader in occupational safety and health, yeah, we enhance our integrity with our customers, business partners, and Congress. E, community responsibilities. When our employees work safely, our customers are safer, and we lead other employers by example. That's all nice in thought, you know, but what are they really doing Well, we're going to get into some of the stuff that they're supposed to be doing to actually make us safer. And we'll see what a good job they're doing. 811.24, safety philosophy. The safety philosophy of the Postal Service is stated below. A, any occupational injury or illness can be prevented. I know they think that because they try to discipline for any occupational injury or illness. The goal is realistic, not theoretical. Supervisors and managers have primary responsibility for the well-being of employees and must fully accept this principle. All right, I want to read that part again. Supervisors and managers have primary responsibility for the well-being of employees and must fully accept this principle. All right, so when people are getting hurt, when people are getting sick, when you have these poor conditions, this is the responsibility of supervisors and managers. That is 811.24A. B, management, which encompasses all levels, including the first line supervisor, is responsible and accountable for the prevention of accidents and control of resultant losses. Just as the line organization is responsible for attaining production levels, ensuring quality of performance, maintaining good employee relations, Well, dude, I'm in favor of it, right? I know I come across as really cynical in many cases. Obviously, I want cooperation between management and employees. It's really just after 18 years, I see the culture where this doesn't consistently happen. All right, so anyway, maintaining good employee relations and operating within cost and budget guidelines. Supervisors and managers must likewise accept their share of responsibility for the safety and health of employees. You know, if they're going to accept part of their responsibility, I think a good way to put that into practice is like getting employees ice machines. I had to fight like hell and enlist my fellow carriers, and we all pulled together to get an ice machine at our station where this summer it's been over 110 degrees for, I don't know, a couple weeks straight, three, like almost all of June, it feels like, was over 110. Now we're into July. We had a bunch of straight days over 115. And when I said, hey, can we get an ice machine in here? The first answer is an automatic no. Is that because supervisors and managers must likewise accept their share of responsibility for the safety and health of employees? You know, there's arguments to be made, obviously. And I made those arguments and wound up getting an ice machine. As I understand it, in the new sorting and delivery centers, the break rooms come automatically with ice machines. So that's something. It's progress. C, it is possible to safeguard against all operating exposures that can result in accidents, injuries, and illnesses. It is preferable to eliminate the sources of danger. However, where this is not practical, management must use proactive measures, including 1, administrative controls, 2, machine guards, 3, safety devices, and 4, personal protective equipment. D, all employees must be trained in proper work procedures and must be educated to work safely and to understand that they are responsible for doing so. Management is responsible for the adequate safety training and education of employees. Dude, I think I'm going to try to squeeze this into a grievance that I'm doing right now. Management is responsible for the adequate safety training and education of employees. However, all employees are responsible for working safely, and in doing so, they benefit not only themselves, but also their organization. E, it is good business practice in terms of efficiency and economy to prevent personal injuries on and off the job. Injuries cost money, reduce efficiency, and cause human suffering. Good to know that they are concerned about human suffering. 811.25, voluntary protection programs. The Postal Service is committed to participation in OSHA's Voluntary Protection Programs, VPP. This program recognizes and establishes partnerships with businesses and work sites that show excellence in occupational safety and health. The Postal Service is committed to effective employee protection beyond the requirements of OSHA standards. Okay, I have to ask, like, what does this protection look like? What sort of protection are we getting beyond OSHA standards? You know, I'm sure that in some cases that's true, like with lifting stuff in the plant, you know, like an example of cool equipment, the equipment that I like is at the plant, they have these flat distribution racks that have these big springs on them. And so as you take more and more flats out, the rack raises up. And so you're always taking out flats at a comfortable height. That's probably not something that's required by OSHA. I don't know. But that is the kind of thing, in fairness, that the Postal Service does to make it make our job more ergonomic. All right, continuing. The Postal Service is also committed to developing and implementing systems that effectively identify, evaluate, and control occupational hazards to prevent employee injuries and illnesses. Postal Service VPP implementation and maintenance procedures based on the latest criteria from OSHA are available on the Safety Resources website. 811.3 Offsite Safety. The Postal Service Safety and Health Program and OSHA standards and regulations cover Postal Service employees who perform Postal Service duties in private employers' establishments, as well as while delivering mail and performing other activities off Postal Service property. To ensure that employees are protected, safe and healthful working conditions must be provided through A, engineering and administrative controls, B, personal protective equipment, C, enforcement of safe work practices, D, withdrawal of employees from the private sector facility, and D, or an E, if necessary, curtailment of mail. So yeah, absolutely. If you have a safety issue, a curtailment of mail is reasonable. You know, it's reasonable, like if a street is flooded and it's not safe to drive through, then you're not going to be able to deliver that mail. If an apartment building is on fire, then you're not going to be able to deliver that mail. And if people have dogs running loose, you're not going to be able to deliver that mail. And curtailment of mail is reasonable. So if you are busted for curtailing mail because of a safety situation, if management tries to issue discipline for it, this would be part of the defense to that discipline, 811.3E, which for safety reasons, if necessary, curtailment of mail. Next, 812, management responsibilities. 812.31, district managers. District managers are responsible for implementing the occupational safety and health programs within their jurisdiction. Additionally, they must develop a district accident reduction plan, ARP, using the safety toolkit to achieve the corporate objectives of reducing injury, illness, and motor vehicle accidents. Refer to the Safety Resources website and the Safety Toolkit for additional information on developing, implementing, and monitoring ARPs. 812.32, installation heads and managers. Installation heads and managers are responsible for A, employee safety and health, B, implementation of the Occupational Safety and Health Program, C, compliance with OSHA standards and regulations, including maintenance of the accident reports, OSHA log, and summary of injuries and illness through the employee health and safety system. D, developing, implementing, and monitoring facility ARPs using the safety toolkit to achieve the corporate objectives of reducing injuries, illnesses, and motor vehicle accidents. Refer to the Safety Resources site and the Safety Toolkit for additional information on developing, implementing, and monitoring ARPs. 812.4, middle-level managers. Middle-level managers are responsible for the safety and health program within their operations. This includes responsibility for administering OSHA-mandated written programs, or A, administering, B, conducting accident prevention activities. So this is like your station manager. What are they doing for B? What accident prevention activities are they conducting? I don't know. Like they tell you to drink water. Is that it? Is that all it takes to qualify? C, training employees. This is what I always harp on. They are required to get these employees trained up. D, evaluating the safety performance of supervisors. And E, coordinating activities, including correction of safety deficiencies with other operational managers. Okay, so something funny happened. I wonder where I left off. This microphone has a mute button on it. And so when I tap the mute button, it's a little touchpad, and it mutes so that I can cough. I'm trying to get better at using that when I cough so that it's not as distracting. So I put my finger on it, I cough nice and loud, then I let my finger go, and I continue talking. What I didn't realize is that I tap it once to mute, and then I tap it again to unmute. And so it has been muted for this big, long stretch. So now what I'm going to have to do is, A, pause the recording, figure out where I left off when I coughed, and then B, figure out how to cut out this big quiet section, which hopefully when you listen to this, there won't be this big quiet section, and we're just going to pick right up where we left off. So let me figure that out. Oh my God. I just erased the whole thing. Dude. Okay, now I'm really going to learn about combining audio files. Well, I guess we'll see. You know what? I'm going to record the whole thing. I'm going to keep going. I went back, figured out where it paused. And guys, because I use this free app to do my recording, when I listen back to it, if I listen back to it through the app, I can't jump around. I have to listen all the way through. So I listened for like 15 minutes just to figure out where I left off, which I did figure out. And then when I pressed record to continue the recording, it showed like a new sound file being created. And this one says I'm only 45 seconds in, and it makes it look like I have a whole new sound file. But then when I pause this recording, it's added on to the back end. So dude, who knows? These are the travails. This is what I deal with to bring the knowledge to you guys. So you're welcome. Now, picking up where I left off and reading second time for me, first time for you, 812.5 supervisor's responsibilities. And dude, if I have to record this whole episode again, then I'll have to read all this crap for a third time. But at least I will learn it that much more, right? It'll reinforce it for me. 812.51, general. Supervisors are responsible for A, identifying and correcting physical hazards, B, investigating and reporting accidents, C, administering OSHA-mandated written programs, D, conducting accident prevention activities, E, training employees. Here it is again, right? They have to keep us trained up, and this podcast exists because they're not doing it. F, developing job safety analyses, and G, enforcing safe work practices. 812.52, supervisors will observe employees' work practices to ensure that they are working safely and document their observations on, and there's a list of a couple of forms here. When used correctly, these forms can A, help the supervisor and the employee to identify and eliminate work practices that could lead to accidents and injuries. B, give the supervisor an opportunity to recognize and reinforce safe work practices. And now we move on to employee rights and responsibilities. Finally, we get to us. 814.1, rights. Employees have the right to A, become actively involved in the Postal Service's safety and health program and be provided a safe and healthful work environment. B, report unsafe and unhealthful working conditions using PS Form 1767, report of hazard, unsafe condition, or practice. Guys, don't be shy about using that 1767. It is a way to document when we have these unsafe conditions and to create a paper trail, and it's something that we absolutely want to do. C, consult with management through appropriate employee representatives on safety and health matters such as program effectiveness. D, participate in inspection activities where permissible, and E, participate in the safety and health program without fear of one. Somehow I didn't copy the word here for one, but you'll see a theme with the rest of them. Two, participate in the safety and health program without fear of two, interference, three, coercion, four, discrimination, or five, reprisal. So essentially no kind of retaliation. If you are engaging in trying to make your workplace safe, they can't hold that against you. 814.2, responsibilities. All employees are responsible for A, complying with all OSHA and Postal Service safety and health regulations, procedures, and practices, including the use of personal protective equipment. B, keeping the work area in a safe and healthful condition through good housekeeping and proper maintenance of property and equipment. C, reporting recognized safety hazards and unsafe working conditions immediately. Guys, please take this obligation seriously. You're not just protecting yourself, you're protecting the other people around you. D, performing all duties in a safe manner. This one, 814.2D, is what management will cite in discipline if you have an on-the-job injury or you get in a car accident or something like that, performing all duties in a safe manner. It's a nice idea, but on a practical level, it's just not possible to be absolutely perfect in your, you know, in all your duties all the time. E, keeping physically and mentally fit to meet the requirements of the job. F, reporting to their supervisors immediately any accident or injury in which they are involved, regardless of the extent of injury or damage. G, driving defensively and professionally, extending courtesy in all situations, and obeying all state, local, and postal service regulations when driving a vehicle owned, leased, or contracted by the postal service. So a long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, I defended a discipline case where a carrier was backing up, tapped into somebody, and nothing happened. They just tapped into this car, and the people were there. They saw it happen, and it was just a little tap, and we got those big rubber bumpers, so nothing happened, and the carrier went about their duties. And then a few days later, the person who the carrier tapped into decided to call the Postal Service and complain. And so in the investigative interview, the carrier is asked, like, well, why didn't you report this? So there is a requirement to report to report to your supervisors immediately any accident or injury in which you're involved, regardless of the extent of injury or damage. So in the investigative interview as a steward, I wanted to prepare that defense in advance and say, well, why didn't we report this? And it's because it was just a tap. There was no damage. And that's, you know, these things just kind of happen. And if you have to report every tap, then when you're backing into a parking space and you touch the curb, do you have to report that? When the tractor trailers are backing up to the dock and they hit those big rubber bumpers on the dock that are there for that purpose, do they have to report that? No, they don't. And so that was the argument we made, and it seems to have taken, and that carrier did not get disciplined for failure to report. So that's something. Anyway, moving on. 816, Joint Labor Management, Safety, and Health Committees. Reference note, for further information, refer to Article 14 of the Collective Bargaining Agreements. Joint Labor Management, Safety, and Health Committees must be established and must function in accordance with applicable collective bargaining agreements. 817, training and education. So there are a bunch of requirements in 817 that say that management has to be trained in safety. And then it goes on. 817.4, general safety orientation for employees. All employees, including non-career employees, must receive a general safety and health orientation and sufficient on-the-job training to enable them to follow safe work practices, to recognize hazards, and to understand the benefits to be gained by following safe work practices. Such training must also include A, site-specific safety rules, B, specific job safety analyses, C, required OSHA programs, D, emergency evacuation procedures, and E, OSHA rights and responsibilities. 817.5, training required by OSHA. So this is a list of stuff that's mostly going to feel like it doesn't apply to us, but I'm going to read through it anyway, and then I'll tell you why at the end. Asbestos management guide, personal protective equipment and respiratory protection programs, bloodborne disease exposure control plans, hearing conservation programs, lead hazard management program, asbestos-containing building materials control program, response to hazardous materials releases, hazard communication program, confined space safety program. All right, so I read all these because these are trainings that are required by OSHA. So if you look in your HERO training record, which I recommend, then you should find all these trainings in there somewhere. And this led to a really interesting situation at my station where we were getting our HIP training this year, our heat illness prevention program training in like March or something. And I decided to look at my HERO training record because in 2023, my HIP training was falsified, as were a lot of people around the country. And I saw on January 4th that this list of required trainings that I just read was listed as completed. These are stand-up talks. And they were all listed as completed on January 4th, including a bunch of other ones. In total, there were 14 trainings that were allegedly completed on that day. And I feel like if there were 14 straight stand-up talks on topics like this, I feel like I'd remember that. And I didn't remember that because my training record was falsified. And then I asked the person next to me, hey man, pull up your hero training record and see what it says for you. And so he pulled up his training record, and his also had 14 trainings that were falsified in January. And not only does he not remember that happening on January 4th, he wasn't even at work because he was out on paternity leave during that time. And it turns out that pretty much our entire station had their training records falsified in this way, and that including these OSHA-required trainings. So that wound up being a grievance that I'm pretty proud of. All right, so more on that. The frustrating thing about it, well, we're not going to get into it. I'm going to keep going. One day I'll talk about it. 817.51, standard curriculum. Learning and development in coordination with SOCP, I don't know what that is, and other headquarters functional areas is responsible for developing, implementing, and keeping current a safety and health training curriculum to comply with OSHA standards and Postal Service policies. Managers and supervisors at all levels must refer to this curriculum and ensure that all affected employees are trained and the training is current and properly recorded. So again, check your hero record, make sure that your training is current and properly recorded. 817.52, special emphasis training programs. Special emphasis training programs must be developed and initiated by headquarters, areas, districts, plants, and other offices as appropriate to A, reduce the principal causes of accidents and injuries, musculoskeletal disorders, and occupational illnesses, and B, ensure compliance with OSHA requirements. So that HIP training that we were just talking about is a good example of this, where this is like a specialized training that we need because we're out in the heat. 817.6, refresher training. Motor vehicle, powered industrial truck, asbestos, hazardous material, and other refresher training programs must be provided and updated as needed per OSHA regulations and Postal Service policies, which is why my training records got falsified, because those trainings are supposed to be given as refreshers every so often. Such programs must also be used for correcting improper work practices before accidents result and for improving work practices after an accident. Refresher training requirements are included in the safety training matrix located on the Safety Resources website. So how often are we supposed to get the refreshers? I don't know. I don't know where the safety training matrix is, and I don't think that I even have access to it. It's probably only for supervisors. 817.7, training in new or additional equipment and techniques. Training must be provided when new or additional equipment or techniques are deployed that may, if not properly used, adversely affect safe and healthful working conditions, OSHA compliance, or both. An example of that is new vehicle training. So before you can drive the Mercedes Metris for the first time, you have to get trained on it. 817.9, training records. For each employee, records of safety and health training must be maintained to demonstrate compliance with Postal Service policies and OSHA requirements. The records must be retained and available to allow inspection by Postal Service and OSHA officials. All safety training must be recorded in the Learning Management System. Note, documentation of safety talks and safety-related on-the-job training must be maintained either at the facility level or, in the case of safety talks, in the safety talks module of the safety toolkit. These records must be available to allow inspection in a timely manner. All right, so when you have those safety talks in the morning, management is supposed to make a record of it. And so if they don't have, like, let's say management tries to, let's say you get in trouble for like a rollaway runaway accident, and they say, well, we've had safety talks on it. Okay, as a union steward, maybe I'm going to ask, let me see your safety talks module in a safety toolkit so that I can see whether you have this employee listed as having been there during that stand-up talk. And if management is lackadaisical about keeping this record, and I bet they are, then that's going to be a tool in your toolkit to show that, no, you have no evidence that the carrier took this training, or maybe they took, it says that they took that training, but it was at a day that the carrier wasn't even at work. You know, these are avenues. So like at my station, I actually do most of the training. And good luck holding a carrier accountable for the training that I give. I mean, I'm just another carrier, right? They don't have to listen to me. And if my stuff's not official, how do they even know if I'm reading the thing right? In fact, sometimes I don't. Sometimes I ad-lib a little bit just to inject a little humor. 819, accountability for safety and health performance, compliance, and evaluations. In any evaluation of individual performance or potential, in any evaluation of individual performance or potential, provision must be made to include the achievement or failure of managers, supervisors, or employees in the performance of their safety and health responsibilities, including OSHA compliance. Evaluations must not be based solely on the number of serious accidents, injuries, and illnesses experienced, but also on how effectively the safety and health program has been implemented and supported. So how well are those programs being implemented and supported? I don't know. All right. Given the difficulties I had in this recording, I'm going to go ahead and call it here, and we are going to pick up on the next episode at 8:20 and continue for a while in safety and health. So we have that to look forward to next time. Guys, thanks for listening, and now I have to figure out how to piece this episode back together.